In looking for an introduction for today, I ran across a story about a guy named Kevin Tennell. In fact, there's a short movie that's been made about his story. Each week, Kevin Tennell was required by the court to mail a dollar to the Herzog family. They sued him for $1.5 million, but they settled for $936 to be paid a dollar at a time every Friday, for the purpose of forcing him to remember what happened on the first Friday of 1982. That's the day their 18-year-old daughter was killed by a drunk driver, and the driver was 17-year-old Kevin Tennell. Tennell served a court sentence. He spent 7 years campaigning against drunk driving, but he had trouble remembering to send a dollar every Friday. This dollar is to be sent 936 times, once a week for 18 years. And Tennell kept forgetting to mail the dollar. The Herzogs took him to court 4 times for failure to comply. They say it's not the money they wanted. What they wanted was for him to never forget. Now, who would question the severe anger these parents must have felt? But is 936 $1 payments enough? When the $936 arrives in the mail, will the remorse be enough? How much is enough? You know, every single one of us will be hurt. At some point, we'll be hurt very deeply by someone. These parents lost a daughter because of a careless teenager driving drunk. She died because somebody drank too much. Part of you may have died because somebody gossiped too much or pushed too much or wasn't around enough. Today, we're going to put the spotlight on Joseph's story from the Old Testament. And the question is this for the morning. What will God do when I face a person who has hurt me? We want to know how God will treat us in those moments when forgiveness doesn't offer much satisfaction while revenge seems much tastier and fulfilling. Joseph is a guy in the Old Testament in whom we see God working. His story is primarily found in the last half of the book of Genesis, around chapters 37 to the end, which is about 50. His story is pretty well known, and there are many scenes from his life which we could learn from. So just a little bit of background will be helpful. Joseph's father is Jacob. His mother is Rachel. He has 11 brothers. We looked at Jacob's story back in May. At the point in Joseph's life where we will spend our time, Joseph has the justifiable opportunity to get revenge for a wrong done to him by his own family. The kind of wrong where no one of us would have thought any less for him if he had chosen the route of revenge. I know in a group this size, we have a good number of people who have experienced some very difficult treatment from those who should have protected you or encouraged you in some way. Unfair and untrue accusations thrown your way. Mean and ugly words spoken about you, especially when you weren't around. Credit stolen for your good work, a dad who left, a mom who's critical, a husband who's abusive, a church leadership who touts a God who will never be pleased even with your best effort, a boss who's manipulative, a coworker who's jealous. From the guy who cut you off in traffic to the company who let you go, every single one of us has a good reason to get revenge. We're not sure we want to leave this one in God's hands. He may not fully understand our hurt. He may not thoroughly cause enough pain in return. He may be too soft, too lenient, too easy, too forgiving. And we can't take that risk, so we'll handle this one ourselves. The trouble with forgiveness is that you have to give up your rights to offer forgiveness. It's a form of self-renunciation, which doesn't harmonize well in our current culture of self-assertion. If we believe we're being mistreated, disrespected, we are trained to complain loudly, publicly, and this complaining is a sign of self-respect. Our culture encourages people to fight and claim their honor. We are not producing forgiving people. Here's a line that I found that fits right here. Most of us have been formed by a culture that nourishes revenge and mocks grace. Forgiveness is definitely on the endangered species list. A little forgiveness would go a long way in calming our conflicts in our homes and any bitterness in our hearts. One truth Joseph seems to understand is that you can't change yesterday, but you can change your response to yesterday. Joseph grows up with 11 brothers. However, it was no secret that Jacob loved Joseph the most. Joseph was the last son Rachel gave birth to, and Jacob also loved Rachel the most from the moment he saw her. Check out this description of their first meeting. This is one of my favorite little paragraphs in the Bible. This is in Genesis 29. While Jacob was still talking with the other shepherds, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. When Jacob saw Rachel, daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and Laban's sheep, he went over and he rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and he watered his uncle's sheep. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and began to weep aloud. Wow, that's quite a response. Rachel must have been some kind of woman. That's very similar to my response when I first met Mary. It's like, hand me the Kleenex. It's all over. It was no secret among the family. Joseph is the favorite. He's daddy's boy. He gets a chariot. The other brothers get a mule. He gets a summer trip to Bluegrass Christian Camp. They get a summer job. He gets a coat from Joseph A. Bank. They get a pack of white t-shirts from Walmart. He gets the easy button, and they get angry. And then they get even. Along Joseph's roundabout journey, he has some very interesting experiences. He becomes, at one point, the chief servant of the Secret Service. Another time, his boss's wife tries to seduce him, and he escapes her grasp but ends up in prison because of her false accusations. While he's in prison, Pharaoh catches wind of his unique ability to interpret dreams, and so he calls him up from the dungeon to interpret one of his. Joseph does. Pharaoh likes him, and he promotes him to be the prime minister of Egypt. One of the most significant events in Joseph's life, however, happens before any of those other things occur. And you need to know about this to grasp the power of God's work in his life. Joseph's brothers really don't like him. There is some serious bad blood in the family. Joseph and his brothers, none of them were innocent in this unhealthy family dynamic. And you could say they were also all victims of parents who set the stage for this kind of infighting. Joseph knew he was the favorite. His brothers knew, and they were sick of hearing about it, watching the preferential treatment and listening to Joseph flaunt it. One day, the brothers make a terrible decision, though it could have gone much worse than it did. Jacob sends Joseph to check his brothers out on the field to see if they were okay, and the brothers see him coming, and the Bible says, as they see him coming, they plotted to kill him. One of the brothers has a little pity and suggests another option. They end up selling Joseph to a band of merchants traveling by, but they tell their dad he was killed by a wild animal. And of course, Jacob is devastated, and Joseph's seat at the family dinner table remains empty for a long, long time. Years later, a famine hits the region, just like Pharaoh's dream suggested. Jacob, Joseph's dad, sends several of his sons to Egypt to find some food. At this point, Joseph is in the role of the prime minister. And when the brothers show up looking for food, they end up standing right in front of Joseph. Not a one of the brothers recognize him, but Joseph definitely recognizes them. What do you suppose goes through Joseph's mind in that initial moment? The last time he saw them, he was looking up from a pit, and he saw them counting money as he rode off in a wagon toward Egypt. Since then, he hasn't seen them for about 20 years. He has no memory of any kind words in the years of growing up together, nothing sentimental to carry with him. So now is the perfect chance for Joseph to get what? Revenge, to get even. And it seems to be almost handed to him on a platter. Joseph has the power to say the word and have all of them hung. Do you think that thought went through his mind? Surely it was there, if only for a moment. Exacting revenge is a powerful position to be in. And I wonder, when was the last time you were tempted to get even? I mean, everyone should get what they deserve, right? Especially when the cut is deep The loss is great. The betrayal is so selfish. You've lost sleep over this. You've lost a relationship. You've lost a career. You've lost a dream. All because of this person's decision to hurt you, to take you out. This is a good place to remind you of something important or let you know for the first time if you didn't already know. The business of judgment is the business of God. Hebrews 10:30 says this, God tells us, it is mine to avenge, I will repay. Proverbs 20, do not say, I'll pay you back for this wrong. Wait for the Lord and he will deliver you. We forget that judgment is God's job, or we ignore that it's his job because we think we'll do a better job than he will. Again, I'm not confident God will be tough enough on this person who's hurt me, so I'll deal with this myself. Joseph, he carves out a different path. With his brothers in the palace, he tells them who he really is, and instead of getting revenge, he gets his family back, and he invites the entire clan to come live with him on the back 40, and so they all move in, and everything seems to be going well for Jacob's boys until Jacob dies. And that's when Joseph's brothers justifiably get a little worried. In Genesis 50, verse 15, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrong things we did to him? What will Joseph do now? Has he only been gracious to his brothers out of honor and respect for his father? Will he now get revenge? One thing is true. The brothers' guilt for how they got rid of Joseph was never far away from them. But that's how guilt works, isn't it? It's always lurking, prowling, seeking an opening to do a number on us. For years, the family has eaten supper around the same table together. The moment Jacob's seat becomes empty, all the progress made has the potential to unravel. Verse 16. So they sent word to Joseph saying, the brothers did, sent word to Joseph saying this, your father has left these instructions before he died. This is what you are to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs they committed in treating you so badly. Now please forgive the sins of the servants of the God of your father. When their message came to him, Joseph wept. This message broke his heart. He thought they were past this. He thought his actions surely confirmed his forgiveness. And Joseph asked them, am I in the place of God? He doesn't want to be in the revenge or judgment business. He knows he wasn't completely innocent. He's glad to leave all of this in God's hands. And this is what Joseph said to his brothers. This may be a line that you recognize. You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. Joseph doesn't downplay their jealousy, their betrayal, his arrogance for what happened years ago. What they did was terrible. How he acted was cocky. He flaunted his dad's favoritism. In this moment, Joseph chooses to take a 20,000-foot view of the situation. And when he does that, the fingerprint of God is unmistakable. His fingerprint is found in every chapter along Joseph's journey. Listen to these phrases throughout Joseph's story. Genesis 39:2, the Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered. Genesis 39:3, the Lord gave him success in everything he did. Genesis 39:20, while Joseph was in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness. Genesis 39:23, the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Genesis 41:16, Joseph says, I cannot do it, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. Genesis 41:50, Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh, which means, it is because God has made me forget all my trouble and all of my father's household. He named his second son Ephraim, which means, it is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. And then Genesis 50:20 again, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. You want to know how God will treat you when you are face to face with a situation, a decision, get revenge or get forgiveness? What we learn from Joseph's life and choice is that God will do all he can to show us a bigger reality. He will pull the lens back so our hurt and loss and heartache is not all that we see and feel. He will include the heavens and the work he's been doing in your life all along. He will show you the part you played. He will remind you of your complicity. And he will open up memories of moments and seasons when he forgave you, just like he did for Joseph. Let's take some time and just talk about forgiveness for a minute before we leave today. A line I've spoken to many brides and grooms of the weddings I've done over the years is this. Each of you needs to become experts at forgiveness. Our homes and our world is in great need. We are desperate for people to become experts at forgiveness. To forgive someone is to admit our limitations. We admit we don't know the whole story. To forgive someone is to display reverence. Forgiveness is believing God is fair and just, and he will do what's right and best in the end. We do great damage to ourselves when we choose not to forgive. Nelson Mandela has a great line. He says, "Resentment is like drinking poison and then hoping it will kill your enemies." Resentment fuels an unforgiving spirit, and it ends up killing us, not our family, or not our enemy. Imagine being assigned the task of carrying a rock the size of a bowling ball with you all of the time. It's heavy, it's inconvenient, but you choose never to put it down. This rock is like a grudge. And you know, we have interesting language surrounding grudges. One writer makes the observation that we talk about grudges like we talk about babies. You can hold a grudge, you can carry a grudge, you can bear a grudge, you can nurse a grudge. Funny thing is that not one of us would voluntarily pick up one of these things and carry it around. Nobody says, "I can't wait to pick up my grudge this morning and haul it around for me for another day." But people do that every single day. Listen to this truth. The grace of God is greater than the grief of life. Grace is at the heart of forgiveness. Forgiveness is hard. It's hard. I guess most of us realize we don't have the resources to forgive on our own. Only when we know we are forgiven will we be able to forgive. Forgiveness begins with acknowledging that we are all failures. We have all been hurtful. We have all betrayed and judged and hurt other people. Sometimes intentionally. It seems like our culture is on a determined path to pit people against each other, to defy, to divide, to disunite. No one has a claim to superiority over anyone else in God's presence. And facing that reality opens a path to being a forgiving person. Here's a great question that I read recently. I want to share it with you. It's great. Do you have the joy of knowing God holds nothing against you? Isn't that good? We have been forgiven of so much more than we'll ever be called on to forgive. It's highly presumptuous of us to refuse to forgive someone when Jesus has already forgiven them or is willing to forgive them. I've given a lot of thought about where to go, you know, at this point with this message this morning. Initially, I thought I would talk very practically about what forgiveness is and what forgiveness isn't. But there seems to be something more fundamental, something a little deeper, which may be more helpful for us. The field of psychology offers us plenty of reasons to be forgiving. Forgiveness undoes hatred. Forgiveness frees us from the past. Without forgiveness, human relationships won't last. That's why in marriage we really need to become experts at forgiveness, or the relationships may not survive. People who forgive are less likely to be hateful, depressed, hostile, anxious. They're more likely to be happier, healthier, more agreeable. And all of this has been proven to be true. However, what I want you to consider is this. Forgiven people are forgiving people. The more I understand how much I've been forgiven, the more willing I'll be to forgive you. And that's the idea I'd like to pursue for a moment. Joseph knows God has been walking with him through all of the unique challenges he's faced. Joseph knows God has changed him, and he knows God has forgiven him for the attitude that he used to have. His attitude contributed to the brokenness, the broken relationship with his brothers. God has forgiven him of all of that and helped him to let go of the bitterness he felt toward all of them. Joseph's reaction when his brothers became worried about, when they became worried after Jacob died, puts on full display Joseph's forgiving spirit. He cries, he weeps when he learns of their fear that he will now get even. God has brought him way past the past, and Joseph gives God credit for where he is. You know, we all have wounds, choices and experiences which make us cringe when they come to mind. And some of those wounds were self-inflicted, others have been caused by others. And these wounds are sensitive. What if God wants to turn your wounds into scars? Scars create the opportunity to tell a story. If people see a scar, they're prone to ask about it. And so we tell them the story. I shared with you a while back that about a visit to the dermatologist. You know, I've had to start going to the dermatologist the past couple of years. It is no fun. I'm glad we don't. I don't think we have any dermatologists here, which is good. That's how I can tell this story, you know. I feel like I go to the dermatologist and I'm disappearing by inches, you know. I've had a couple of cancerous spots cut off, and that's left scars on my skin. A couple of years ago, I was prescribed this nasty chemotherapy cream. Some of you probably have had to do this, and you put it on your face. Basically, this cream, over about 3 weeks, burns your face off. It's awful. And the most visible part of your body, you know, it's on fire. It's terrible. And the PA explained to me what was going to happen to my face. And I let her know, I was like, I can't do that. I'm regularly in front of people. You know, it'd be kind of distracting. She said, well, I guess you have a good opportunity to tell your story and encourage people to wear sunscreen. And I told her, that's not my mission. I wasn't called to share that story. There's a more important story that I care to share. So the story, I guess, is simply this from the scars is, enjoy the lake, but wear sunscreen. You know, I'll just share that. She'll be happy. We can talk about scars because it doesn't hurt to touch them, unlike a wound. If you touch a wound, you're going to feel some pain. Again, what if God wants to turn your wounds into scars? For this to happen, God has to do a lot of work. You know, I've got a place in my arm right here that was cut out about a month ago, and it's still healing over. God's doing something there that I can't heal myself. I can't make a scar appear, you know, a scab and then a scar. And I can't do that. So here's the question I mentioned earlier. Do you have the joy of knowing that God holds nothing against you? The times we've let God down, those are not the truest things about us. Heaven has declared that you and I are a new creation. We are clean, we're fresh, we're forgiven. God has come near to us to heal our wounds, to create scars, to inspire a story of which he's the center. He's the star. He's the hero. Jesus knows what it's like to be hurt, to be betrayed, to be shelved. He knows what it's like to be misunderstood and maligned. Paul tells us if anyone is in Christ, he is what? The new creation. The old is gone and the new has come. Scars and all. Forgiven people are forgiving people because we carry the scars. We have a story. That's what God does for us when we've been hurt. When we face a decision to get even or give forgiveness. He reminds us through our scars that everyone has been wounded. Everybody's been hurt. And he reminds us through his scars that everyone can be forgiven. Just like I've been forgiven, and just like you've been forgiven. The God who holds nothing against me will lead me down a path of forgiving others, because forgiven people are forgiving people. That's the invitation today. The invitation to forgive. The invitation to swim upstream in our culture of self-assertion, in our culture of mocking grace. Instead, let's be people who forgive. The invitation to let go of the rock, to release the grudge and forgive. The invitation to be like Jesus. He forgives us so we can forgive each other. Forgiven people are forgiving people. And living that out will definitely make a kingdom difference in our world. Let's stand together and sing.